Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
And welcome, everyone. Welcome. How many times, I want to know, have you been listening to a news report and found something that you use every single day being added to that ever-growing list of possible known carcinogens? Well, it's happened to me many times. Instead of warning people that a chemical is harmful, even deadly, to human health, what if we didn't need to use it at all? Well, investigative journalist Elizabeth Grossman is my first guest, and she's joining us to talk about the promise of green chemistry, a world where pollutants and poisons stay out of products, the environment, and us. And then coming up at 12:30, independent writer and consultant Laurie Mazur is the editor of A Pivotal Moment, with chapters by world-renowned expert. It's a book that many say should be required reading for national and global leaders. I would say that of both of my guests' books today. As some leaders call for population control, Mazur says coercive efforts to control population are unnecessary, counterproductive, and just plain wrong. She'll share some proven solutions for managing what many call an issue equally as important as climate change. But first, I'm very pleased to welcome Elizabeth Grossman back to Conversations Live. She's the author of several books, including High-Tech Trash, Digital Devices, Hidden Toxics and Human Health, and Watershed, The Undamming of America, and Adventuring Along the Lewis and Clark Trail. Her writing has appeared in Mother Jones, The Nation, Salon, The Washington Post, and other publications. And she's a neighbor to us here in Seattle. She lives in Portland, Oregon. Elizabeth Grossman, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for inviting me back.
I'm very pleased to have you back. A great book again.
Thank you.
You have done an extensive amount of research in this book. Last time we talked, you influenced the way we look at electronics and the way that we dispose of our electronic trash. In Chasing Molecules, your focus is everyday products, how they affect the earth, our water, the air, and ultimately us as humans. But you go beyond the threat of toxic chemicals and look at what is called green chemistry. Tell us what led up to writing this book, Elizabeth.
Well, it was actually my last book, High-Tech Trash, that introduced me to what I have to say is an absolutely fascinating world of following scientists in their discovery about what all of these synthetic chemicals that we're using do, how they behave, what they do in their intended uses, and also what they do when they get places that we'd rather not have them, in the air and the water and ultimately in our food and our bodies and also in wildlife. And while I was working on High-Tech Trash, I became absolutely fascinated by what scientists were discovering about quite a number of the chemicals that are used in those devices, things like flame retardants, chemicals that are used in all sorts of different ways in plastics to make the plastics themselves and to etch microchips. And it turns out chemicals, either the same chemicals or very similar versions of those chemicals, are used in just countless everyday consumer products. And these things are turning up in our water, as I mentioned, in our food. And some of them are so persistent and resist environmental degradation so well that they're ending up in really, really remote places in the Arctic and in wildlife all over the world.
It's really quite shocking to read the book. I want to read, first of all, what the Chicago Tribune says about Elizabeth Grossman, so our listeners have a better idea of where you're coming from. And you won really high praise from the Chicago Tribune, not easily come by. They said, "We depend on writers like Grossman to shake us awake, dispel the fever dream of consumerism, and reveal the true cost of our love for technology." That was about your High-Tech Trash book. But the same, I think, can be said for this book, because even though we know, we hear headlines, we hear that things are being added to that list of products that causes cancer and other illnesses, birth defects, it doesn't seem to be getting any better. We just seem to be growing that list more. And you focus in this book on not just what's happening and why it's happening, but on some solid solutions. I wonder if you talk to us a little bit about John Warner, because this surprised me. Tell us who he is and what he does.
Well, John Warner is a scientist, a chemist who is based in Massachusetts, and he, along with another chemist named Paul Anastas, are often referred to as the founders of green chemistry. And I also should say, partly by way of answering your previous question, that I was actually introduced to the world of green chemistry and green engineering and what's called design for the environment while I was investigating the environmental and health problems posed by high-tech electronics and manufacturing, because that's when I was introduced to people who were trying to solve the problem of these toxic chemicals by designing new materials, new synthetic chemicals, and products that would use those materials so that the hazardous and toxic elements are just not in those products from the get-go. And that's what John Warner and Paul Anastas set out to outline when they first sketched out the principles of green chemistry. And John Warner and Paul Anastas falls into this category, as do any number of other scientists I had the really good fortune to get to talk to working on this book. I ended up thinking of them as sort of the charismatic megafauna of green chemistry. They are incredibly dynamic, engaged, and so unlike anything you'd think of when you try to remember your chemistry professor from high school. They're
right.
Just so animated. And one of the things that John Warner told me that made a huge impression on me is that one of the really big challenges in chemistry and in the whole business of synthesizing new materials is that historically, traditionally, and even to this day, if you get an advanced degree or even undergraduate degree in chemistry, you're never required to take a course in toxicology or ecology or any kind of environmental health science that would train you to look for these hazards.
And that's what shocked me so much, because he preaches this now that we've got to have it in education, doesn't he?
Exactly. And he realized he had, and he still has, a very successful career as a synthetic chemist. And he was working in traditional industry and had synthesized literally hundreds and hundreds of molecules and has patents named after him. And all of a sudden it dawned on him one day that he had no idea what made a molecule toxic. He could put little bits of atoms and molecules together and make these amazingly new functional materials, but he really didn't know what it was about those structures in chemistry that would give them adverse impacts on human health and the environment.
Mm. I read an article that you wrote recently, Elizabeth, and it said that in India, the University of Delhi now requires every chemistry major to take one full year of green chemistry. So that's heartening, I think.
Yeah, and this is starting to spread around the world and is starting to gain some traction in this country as well. Actually, it was not this year. It was in the fall. I went and spoke to students at a college here in Oregon, and afterwards a couple of students came up to me and they said, yeah, we just did a unit on green chemistry. And I can't tell you how exciting it was to me to have a couple of 19 or 20-year-old young men come up to me and just have their eyes lit up about chemistry. I mean, that was really exciting.
not something that pushes everybody's buttons, for
exactly.
Sure. But it's important. I want to just put this in perspective here, because according to statistics in your book, there are 30,000 chemicals currently in common commercial use in the U.S. and Canada. 4%, there are 400 recognized as persistent and bioaccumulative. Only 4% are routinely monitored for environmental and human health impacts, and a full 75% have not been studied for those impacts.
Yeah, it's pretty extraordinary how slow the process has been and how little we know about so many of the chemicals that we actually use. And that 30,000 that you cited that are commonly produced, that's only a subset of the over 80,000 synthetic and other chemicals that are registered for use in the United States. So it's a huge landscape of these materials. And one of the things that's going on now is at both the EPA, Environmental Protection Agency, and through legislation at both state and federal level, is trying to really get a grip on this so that we can do a better job of protecting human health and the environment from hazardous chemical exposures.
Yeah. And going back to John Warner, he said that corporate America is being pressured to develop sustainability goals, but we can't measure if that effort is real on paper. We can't measure intent, only behavior. Are we seeing a significant difference in behavior, not just talk?
Yeah, I think it's hard to quantify with any really hard metrics and measurements, but I actually just wrote a piece that is posted today on Scientific American Online about the EPA's announcement just before New Year's that it would be developing a list of chemicals of concern and beginning what it's calling action plans to, as I mentioned, try and do a better job of protecting people, particularly children, from exposure to chemicals that are now widely recognized as hazardous. And one of the things I learned while talking to some retailers and manufacturers about this announcement, and again, it was really early days, is that in many cases, it's even an announcement of a change in policy like this is enough to begin to get some manufacturers to try to get ahead of any regulation. So there are quite a lot of changes that have been made in products to remove things that are considered hazardous.
Mm. I just heard on the way up here, I was listening to the radio to news, and a senator in Washington is trying to get plastics with BP taken away, banned, basically. So when we come back, I want to talk about plastics because we hear such a lot of conflicting information. I know I went through my cupboards years ago when they said soft plastics are bad for you, use hard plastics. And then last year or the year before, I had to go through and remove all the hard plastics. So I want to ask you about that when we come back. Please stay with us. We're talking today with investigative journalist Elizabeth Grossman. Her book is called Chasing Molecules, Poisonous Products, Human Health, and the Promise of Green Chemistry.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
Next Monday on Conversations Live, leading financial expert Jane Bryant Quinn on how to manage your money today. Quinn will share how to know if you should fire your bank, how to identify crooks in suits, how to avoid being ripped off by the new credit card rules, and how to reduce student debt. She'll also provide tips on managing your money when you simply don't have time. And the top three things you should focus on today. Tune in Monday at noon Pacific to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And see conversationslive.net for more information. Email Vicki at info@conversationslive.net if you've got questions you'd like to get answered.
Does work feel like a puzzle and you don't know where all the pieces are, or you have all the pieces, but you don't know what the picture should look like? Then join me, Denise Rubin, 30-year vet in human resources. I've sat in the boardroom and in the executive offices, and I'll share with you the trials and tribulations of the workplace and how together we can solve the workplace puzzle one piece at a time. Tune in to Work Does Matter, Fridays from 1 to 2 in the afternoon on Alternative Talk 1150. Visit my website at workdoesmatter.com.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to help you heal and stay healthy.
Clear, clean, and crisp. Check us out in digital quality sound on FM 98.9 HD3. Alternative Talk 1150.
Happiness, more or less, it's just a change in me, something in my liberty. Oh, my mind.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And my guest in this segment is Elizabeth Grossman. She's an investigative journalist. And her new book is called Chasing Molecules, Poisonous Products, Human Health, and the Promise of Green Chemistry. And I have to say, you know, I've looked at a lot of books that cover these subjects. I think Elizabeth is one of the best. Not only does she do really thorough research, and it's all substantiated, but she's a great writer, and it makes for very easy reading, too. So congratulations on another great book, Elizabeth, that I think is very important. I said before the break, I wanted to ask you about plastics. You know, first of all, we're told, get rid of all your soft plastics. Hard plastic's the way to go. Then we're told, no, hard plastic is really, really bad for you. Somebody in Washington has just called for it to be banned in sports bottles, etc. What is going on? What do we believe?
Well, there are lots and lots of different kinds of plastics. The two kinds of plastics that are really under the spotlight right now, and that, again, does not take into consideration all of those that are out and about and that we encounter practically daily. But the two kinds that we're really sort of taking a really hard look at right now are one category of soft plastics, and those could be put in the category of polyvinyl chloride, PVC plastics, which are those soft, flexible things that we might loosely describe as vinyl that have gone into children's toys mm-hmm. for years, into upholstery, into shower curtains. They go into medical tubing. I mean, they truly have thousands of different uses. And the reason those have come under scrutiny is because historically, and there are now a few that use some different materials, but historically, in order to make PVC fully functional as a bendable, moldable, flexible plastic, you need what are called plasticizers, a chemical to be put into the base material that will make it flexible, because without that kind of additive, the base material is really brittle and it just isn't any good to you if you want to make, a shower curtain or bendable medical tubing
right.
or a chewable toy. That's just not going to work. And those plasticizers have typically been what are called phthalates. It's a funny name and an odd spelling, P-H-T-H-A-L-A-T-E-S. And it turns out, and this has been known literally for decades, that those phthalates, those plasticizers, eventually migrate out, kind of evaporate out of the base plastic and get into the surrounding air, onto surrounding surfaces. And there's now been quite a lot of research to show that those chemicals generally fall into the category of what are called endocrine disruptors, and they can interfere with the hormones that, in the case of phthalates, are involved in reproduction and development. The other category of plastics that people are really scrutinizing are the ones that are made up of a chemical called bisphenol A, polycarbonate mm-hmm. plastic, which are those hard, shatterproof plastics that have typically gone into refillable sports water bottles, unbreakable baby bottles, and they're used in countless appliances. So those are the two kinds of plastics that people are really focused on. And the bisphenol A, like the phthalates, is now widely recognized as an endocrine disruptor. And even though it makes up a really, really sturdy material, over time, those molecules also migrate out of the plastic and can get into us. And that's where it can create a problem.
Mm. I want to talk about nanotechnology a little, and then we'll look at some positive things that are happening in green chemistry, because I think the chapter on nanotechnology was a little scary. Tell us what nanotechnology is and why it's become so prevalent.
Well, nanotechnology involves working with materials, with elements and molecules at an absolutely infinitesimal scale, down practically at the atomic level. And one of the really exciting things I got to do in the past couple years was have a look through some microscopes that are looking at things at the nano level. And the best way I could think of describing it was like, I don't know, going to a planetarium or one of those seeing one of those films that of
right.
A Million Miles Under the Sea kind of thing, because instead of looking at a little flat, shiny piece of metal, you looked at something that looked like a galaxy or, I don't know, some really odd kind of great system, and you realized you were looking at something so small it's almost unimaginable. Scientists can now, and synthetic chemists can now manipulate materials at this really tiny level. And when things are used at that scale, it turns out they behave in ways that the very same material would not at a conventional or even sort of micro scale. And so they can be, these materials can be put together at that size in ways that perform all sorts of really exciting tasks. And they are now, nanomaterials are being used for targeted drug deliveries. They are being used to make some really important medical equipment. But they're also now being put into just hundreds and hundreds of consumer products. And the trouble is that given their really unusual and brand new to us behaviors, we don't really know how they're going to behave entirely in the environment. And there were just some studies published in the past few weeks or months that noted that some of the nanomaterials that are being used as antibacterials or antimicrobials and things like socks to sort of help you not have such stinky socks.
Oh,
perhaps,
goodness
They're
me.
Coming out in the wash, these materials.
Oh, my goodness.
And, you know, people don't really know exactly how these things are going to behave. So that's the scary part. The positive part is that there are a whole lot of scientists who are working in this area who are for the first time really getting together and sharing what they're learning as they're learning it about how these materials behave, with the hopes of trying this time to sort of get it right and not unleash hazardous products too much before we know how they're going to behave. But in a lot of ways, you know, that horse is already out of the barn.
Yeah. So, but going forward, this is what green chemistry is all about. It's going forward. Let's not be in denial, because you talk in there about we've been in denial for 50 years on many of these issues. You traveled literally all over the world to research this book. What shocked you the most, Elizabeth? And then conversely, what amazed you the most in a positive way on your travels?
Well, I think the thing that really initially shocked me the most was, one, that these materials, some of these chemicals, because they are so durable and they do resist environmental degradation so successfully, that they can last for decades and decades, and they can, on their own, traveling with dust and with water and with air currents, they can literally travel all over the world and end up continents away from where they were ever used or produced or disposed of. That I found sort of profoundly shocking.
And doesn't everything that's like in the middle latitudes migrate north regardless?
Yeah, anything that's released in the northern hemisphere will eventually move north. So the Arctic, which we think of as this, you know, pristine and untouched remote place, is actually sadly now full of these kind of chemicals. And
right.
I guess the other thing that really shocked me was when I started reading about all of the kind of testing that's going on now, that people are measuring human blood and other samples, testing them for the presence of these chemicals, how consistently they're turning up, that they're really turning up in virtually everybody who's been tested, including newborns. I found that pretty shocking.
That is alarming, yeah.
On the positive side, the thing that I'm really excited about is the fact that there are people literally all over the world, again, who are trying to make new materials and ask questions about their behavior when they're first being made, and are working really hard to try and create a whole new generation of materials that will be without hazard. It's going to be a really hard climb, but there is some really exciting work being done just literally all over the world.
Mm. And it sounds, going back to John Warner again, we need to get pressure on schools to get this at least a year of this put into university programs for chemists, right?
Yeah, I think education is absolutely key. But at the same time, I think we have to work with the folks who are out there now.
Yeah.
And one of the things I found really interesting is that in a lot of new policy that is aimed at trying to curtail and restrict our use of known hazards, a lot of that policy is now being formulated in tandem with policy that's going to encourage the development, research and development into safe alternatives using green chemistry. And I think that's pretty exciting that that is starting to have some real currency.
Mm. Well, we're almost at the end of our segment, Elizabeth, but you say with the economic issues we've felt over the past 12, 18 months, that some people might say focusing on safer, cleaner materials might seem like a luxury. But based on what you learned researching this book, we simply can't afford to write it off.
Yeah, I think that's one of the sort of final points that I really wanted to make in the book is that this shouldn't be and can't be a luxury. And if we can take care of this problem, ultimately it will be cost effective in many places, including healthcare.
Mm. Well, tell us what's the one thing you'd like to leave our listeners with today and where people can find out more information about you and your work?
Easy question to the second answer. My publisher, Island Press, has a website for the book, chasingmolecules.org. That's pretty easy. The one thing I'd really like to leave people with is, you know, you don't have to, one, be terrified of exposure to these things. Don't be overly alarmed. Don't panic. And also, you know, don't stick your head in the sand. It's actually not that difficult to make some strategic choices that could really make a difference for you and your family and your household.
Mm. And we can find out more about that by reading your book, right?
Yeah.
Well, Elizabeth Grossman, always a pleasure. Very pleased to talk to you again. Thank you for being with us today.
Oh, and thank you so much.
And you can find out more about Elizabeth at elizabethgrossman.com. Her book, Chasing Molecules, Poisonous Products, Human Health, and the Promise of Green Chemistry. Please stay with us. When we come back, we'll be joined by Laurie Mazur. She's an independent writer and consultant, and she's going to tell us that we're living in a pivotal moment. Please stay with us.
Friends, they come, and the lines, they go.
Hi, I'm Terry with tsigns.com with a quick tip for you. Next time you're organizing an event, help unify your message and spread the word with great signage. Banners, flags, decals, t-shirts, and more can all be custom designed to give your event a unique look and feel. We're a family-run business who guarantees we'll beat any price and still give you great quality and personal service. See tsigns.com or call me today, Terry at tsigns.com, 206-971-6800. 206-971-6800.
If you like to read fiction, check out Book Talk Podcast Reviews, brought to you weekly by Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Go to conversationslive.net and click on the menu at Book Talk to hear reviews of an eclectic range of books. We review fiction from chick lit and mystery to suspense and literary, from new to old, overlooked and forgotten. Check out Book Talk Podcast today at conversationslive.net. If you'd like to suggest a book for review, email info@conversationslive.net or call 206-414-6159.
Hi, I'm Andrea Kay, America's leading career expert. I know it's going to be a great conversation when Vicki St. Clair asked me to offer my career advice on her show. Vicki asks thoughtful questions, she's thorough, she works hard to bring you great guests who walk their talk with information and solutions that can lift your career and better your life so that you'll live well, live strong. My advice? Tune into our conversations and all the interviews on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair for thought-provoking insight and tips on the things that really matter in your life. And visit AndreaKay.com, that's Andrea, K-A-Y.com, for information about my books and loads of free practical advice and inspiration for your career.
Alternative Talk 1150 is now being broadcast in digital quality on FM 98.9 HD3. So rejoice, you early adopters of technology.
My chemistry.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest in this segment is Laurie Mazur. She's an independent writer and consultant to nonprofit organizations. She's the editor of A Pivotal Moment, Populations, Justice, and the Environmental Challenge. I'm going to bring her on and have her tell you more about the kind of work she does. Laurie, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Well, the book is called A Pivotal, I can't say that one today, A Pivotal Moment. You say we're there at a pivotal moment, not just environmentally, but demographically too. But before we get into that, I want to just share a little bit about the background, the kind of work that you do, and how this book came into play, because I believe it was a follow-up or an update to the Cairo conference that happened 15 years ago.
Exactly. Yes, this is a contributed volume, and it began life as an update of a book I did 15 years ago on the eve of the historic UN Population Conference in Cairo. And when I set out to do an update of the book 15 years later, we looked around and saw that some things had changed and some things had not, and realized that this truly is a pivotal moment. I think it's increasingly evident that this is a pivotal moment for the global environment. But I do think it's less well known that we're at a pivotal moment for world population. And that's why we decided to write this book.
Right. And ultimately, world population, it's growing, but not necessarily because of birth rates, but because we're living longer.
Yes, that's true. But birth rates have come down in many parts of the world, but they remain quite high, especially in places where the status of women is low and where poverty is most severe. And that's why justice is in the title. That's why this is really a social justice issue as well as an environmental issue.
Mm. I read in the book that there's a bumper sticker around where you live, and it says, if you want peace, work for justice. And you said what we need to do is replace the word peace and say, if we want sustainability, work for justice. So let's just get some background here. Right now, the largest generation of young people in human history is coming of age. Nearly half the world's population, some 3 billion people, is under the age of 25. That's quite staggering.
It is staggering, yeah. And that generation is so important on so many levels. The choices that they make, and importantly, the choices that are available to them, will determine so many things, including the size of world population by the middle of the century. I mean, right now, we're at 6.8 billion. And depending on the childbearing choices made by the largest generation in history, we could get to anywhere between 8 billion and 11 billion people on the planet by 2050.
That's quite staggering. It's not just the number of people we need to be concerned about, though. It's what those people are doing. And your book covers the whole world. It's a global issue. Why should somebody sitting in Mississippi listening be concerned about the population in another country?
Well, I think we're at a moment where it's increasingly clear that so many of the problems that we face are global. The environmental challenges of this century, like climate change, are really global. We really are all connected.
Right. You say that the goal of a smaller world population is an important one. It matters a lot. It matters how we get there. And the best way to slow population growth is not top down, but by number one, education and choices and family planning. And number two, addressing the economic and gender inequities that limit choices for so many of the world's people. And then urgently, we need to invest in the young men and women of the largest generation, which we just talked about. You talk a lot in the book about women's rights. Tell us why you focus so much when you're talking about population and the world environment and demographics, why you focus so much on women's rights?
Well, women's rights are absolutely critical. And, the great news in this book is that we've learned so much in the last half century about how to slow population growth. And we've learned that it's really not about top-down population control, as you said, but instead it's about making sure that all people, women especially, are able to make real choices about childbearing, that women have both the means and the power to make the decision about whether to bring a child into the world.
Some countries have tried to limit that. China is one. Peru is another one. And somebody wrote an essay in the book about Peru. I wonder if you'd talk a little bit about what happened in Peru when they tried to, they actually forced sterilized women, I understand, in some cases.
Yes, it's a very sad story. And it's also, it's an excellent exhibit A about why population control doesn't work. In addition to the fact that it's a human rights violation, the right to choose the number and spacing of one's children is an internationally recognized human right. So it's wrong to limit people's choices about childbearing. But it also inevitably produces a backlash, and that's what happened in Peru. After this, it was under Fujimori during the economic crisis in the 90s,
mm-hmm.
And it was a horrible program which targeted poor, mostly indigenous women in the mountains and, essentially rounded women up and often sterilized them without their consent. They often didn't speak the language of the doctors who they were talking to. And there was a backlash against this. There was a great uprising, which in part was organized by evangelical Christians from the United States, who were scandalized by this horrible program. So the upshot of it was that in places where women were once sterilized against their will, now they can't receive a tubal ligation if they want one because it's been outlawed.
Mm.
So there has been a restriction on women's reproductive rights as part of the backlash against this draconian program.
So they were, either way, they've lost out. I mean, they couldn't, they didn't select sterilization before they were forced to take it. And now that even if they want sterilization, they can't have it.
Exactly. And China is often held up as an example of a draconian population control program that achieved results. But it's worth noting that China achieved its greatest reductions in birth rates in the decade before it instituted the one-child-per-family policy.
Mm.
So, and there are many other countries, Thailand and even Iran, that have achieved similar results with much less authoritarian programs.
I want to read a little paragraph from the book. It's by this essay is by Ellen Chesler, and this is a series. This book mostly is a series of essays put together by world-renowned experts on this subject, and it says today's challenges in global health, development, and the environment will not be solved by technological innovation alone. Before we can hope to improve human well-being, we must address the gross violations of human rights that prevent individuals and especially women from developing the will, claiming the authority, and taking the necessary actions to improve their own lives. Women are central to environmental sustainability. Tell us some of the steps that you are taking or people you're working with are taking to help improve the situation with women's rights in this regard.
Well, as you mentioned earlier, girls' education is absolutely critical. Great strides have been made in primary education, but now the next challenge is really keeping girls in school through the secondary level. And this has so many social benefits. Women who receive an education, they have fewer children, they have healthier children, They and their children are much less likely to live in poverty. Girls' education has been linked to a host of positive benefits, from economic development to higher crop yields to you name it. If there is a panacea, girls' education is probably it. But it's also another crucial ingredient is making sure that people have the means to make their own decisions about childbearing, which is about family planning and reproductive health services. Still today, there's something like 200 million women around the world who are sexually active and don't want to get pregnant, but lack access to family planning and reproductive health services. And meeting that unmet need would go a long way towards slowing population growth.
Mm. You said, I think it was in the introduction to the book, and by the way, I learned a lot from the introduction to this book, which I know you wrote. You said that you have two photographs on your desk, one of a boy digging through trash, I think, and another of an 11-year-old girl who was about to be married. Tell us why you keep those on your desk and why, as Westerners, we have the right to go and interfere in other people's cultures, or why you think we do.
Well, those pictures were very moving to me, especially because the children in the pictures are around the ages of my children, and it's an important reminder to me of, you know, the humanity of people who are in such need around the world. I would like to emphasize that this is really not about interfering in people's cultures. You know, like I said, it really is not about telling people what to do. It's about making sure that people have the ability to make their own choices about childbearing. It's about those 200 million women around the world who already know that they don't want to get pregnant but lack access to family planning and reproductive health services. It's about helping those women make choices that they've already made but are unable to implement.
Yeah, choices that we take for granted.
Exactly.
Choices. Yeah, I mean, I grew up in Britain where we have free family planning. Everybody gets access to free family planning. A big, big, big thing. We're going to take a quick break. When we come back, we'll continue talking with Laurie Mazur. Her book is called, she's the editor of this book, it's called A Pivotal Moment, Population Justice and the Environmental Challenge. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Do something different with your spare time. Give baby animals at Paws a fresh start. With the assistance of caring volunteers, Paws helps hundreds of orphaned and sick kittens and puppies each year. Join us and save lives. Become a Paws foster care volunteer. For more information, visit paws.org or 425-787-2500. Paws.org or 425-787-2500.
If you missed a show on Conversations Live, check out conversationslive.net for dozens of free podcasts. Topics range from health and healing to business and career growth, from personal development to creativity, adventure, and the challenges of the human spirit. See conversationslive.net for talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Conversationslive.net, making a difference one word at a time.
Do you have legal questions? Need to know where to turn?
Hi, this is Rick Gregrick, your host of Northwest Legal Compass.
Northwest Legal Compass will address your questions on a variety of legal topics, including estate planning, asset protection, real estate and business planning, and more. The legal and accounting staff of Gregrick & Associates are dedicated to providing you with superior legal and tax services. Their integrated counsel is geared to the achievement of your goals.
Visit us on the web at rjglegal.com.
Be sure and tune in every Friday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Thanks for joining us on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. If you have comments or questions on any of our shows, we want to hear from you. Email info at conversationslive.net. Call Vicky toll-free at 800-495-7617. That's 800-495-7617. Or leave a message at our special listener voicemail box, 206-414-6159. That's 206-414-6159.
Tired of the insanity of other talk radio stations? Just click your radio knob and say, "There's no place like Alternative Talk 1150.
You're all I wanted. Don't want me now. Don't.
And welcome back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. My guest in this segment is Laurie Mazur. She's the editor of a series of essays. The book is called A Pivotal Moment, Population Justice and the Environmental Challenge. And we're talking about population today, but we also want to tie it into, you know, why it's important environmentally. Laurie, talk a little bit more about the population as it stands and how that affects the relationship with the environment, how it affects our sustainability, if you would.
Sure. Yeah. As we noted earlier, this is a pivotal moment. We're now at 6.8 billion people on the planet, and choices made in the next decade or so will determine whether we get to 8 billion or even 11 billion by the middle of the century. And the relationship between population and the environment is very complicated, and I'd like to talk a little more about that. But it's clear most environmentalists would agree that 8 billion would be better than 11 billion for the climate, for every other natural system that sustains us. In fact, there's some really good new research in the book that shows that if we can stabilize world population at 8 billion rather than 9 billion or more, it would avert about a billion tons of carbon dioxide a year by the middle of the century. Which is about the equivalent of completely eliminating deforestation. So it's part of what we need to do about climate change. It's not everything we need to do, but it would make a big difference.
Mm-hmm. There's a chapter in the book here, an essay by James Gustav Speth. It's called From Crisis to Sustainability. And hey, there's good news in here. Because it said, given all the impacts of the current global economic crisis, it's easy to miss one. There's a lot less garbage. Apparently, in early 2009, as the stock market tanked and growth went negative, the amount of trash sent to American landfills declined by as much as 30%. We're also using less energy and thus are generating less of the emissions that cause global warming. So I guess our economic crisis had a little plus there, although they do work very closely together, don't they?
Yes, but it certainly tells you something about how we measure progress, doesn't it?
Mm-hmm.
That there's such a strong connection between GDP and how much garbage we produce, I think both literally and metaphorically.
So tell us a little bit, when you're looking at social justice and world population and environmental challenge, what we're looking at to take us from crisis to sustainability.
Well, I think clearly the twin challenges for the next century are to figure out how we can live within our means environmentally, and how we can distribute those means a little more equitably. I mean, right now, the problem is that some half the people on the planet are living in pretty abject poverty on less than $2 a day. And those people have a need and a right to develop economically. But the problem is that we are already in very serious trouble environmentally, and that if they follow the same path to development that we have, of course, it'll be disastrous. So the challenge is to find ways to live more lightly on the earth and to distribute resources more equitably and use them much less wastefully.
Right.
We have our work cut out for us.
Well, we certainly do. And for somebody who, you know, wants to make a difference, there are grassroots organizations out there. You say that implementing policy steps is going to take a lot of work to do. Are there international groups that work toward this? Is there an an international group that's responsible for managing population control? I don't want to use the control word because I know you don't agree with population control.
Yes, exactly. But there are many terrific organizations that are working on this issue, that are working to make sure that people have family planning and reproductive health services. And actually, on my organization's website, we call the organization the Population Justice Project, and it's a project that came out of this book. And on our website, which is www.popjustice.org, your listeners can find links to many organizations who are working on different pieces of this puzzle.
Right. Well, let's just get some facts here. I was shocked at this. It said during this 30-minute broadcast that we're doing now with Lori Mazur, during this 30-minute broadcast, 4,685 people have been brought into the world, right?
That's right.
That is really quite amazing. And the global population increase every year is approximately 82 million. That's 20 million more than the whole population of Great Britain.
It's staggering, isn't it?
It is staggering. But, you know, times are tough right now. We just talked about the economic crisis and how everybody's been affected by that. People have lost jobs. We're in the middle of a war that seems never ending. In fact, it seems as though it's expanding. Why should people care? Why should people care? Haven't they got enough to care about?
Well, it's a very good question. I guess I would answer that the stakes are really high. You know, right now, for my generation, we think about climate change as being about saving the polar bears. But for my kids' generation, it could be about saving us. The stakes are about as high as they could be. And slowing population growth is one of the things we need to do to ensure a sustainable future. It's not the only thing, but the good news is that everything we need to do to slow population growth is actually something we should be doing anyway, like ensuring access to family planning and educating girls and promoting sustainable, equitable development. These things are necessary. They're the right thing to do, and they're relatively inexpensive. So it's kind of a no-brainer.
Mm. Throughout the book, I don't know how many people contributed to this book. It's quite a number.
Yeah, 33.
But throughout the book, consistently, almost in every chapter, I read about women and more women. It sounds as though it's up to us to put this right.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear the last thing.
It sounds as though it's up to us to put this right, to take.
Well, yes, but that makes it sound like a terrible burden, doesn't it?
Well, no, I don't think so.
it's up to us, but it's up to everyone on the planet to make sure that women have the rights and the resources they need to do the right thing.
Mm. What do you say to people who say that, because they are out there, Lori, people say, you know, the environmental climate warming is just political hype. What do you say to those people?
Well, they're not reading what I'm reading. I think that, the climate gate thing about the emails was something of a distraction. There are plenty of naysayers, but the bulk of scientific opinion holds that anthropogenic climate change is happening. I don't think that there's a huge amount of reasonable debate about that.
Mm. So to sum it up, really, the progressive solutions that we're looking at to help slow population growth are initiatives we should be making anyway, you say, ensuring access to family planning and reproductive health services for women, educating girls, empowering women, and promoting sustainable and equitable development. Anything else you'd like to add to that? We're almost at the end of our segment.
That's a good list, but I do think it's important to realize that this is relatively inexpensive. The developed countries' share of the cost to provide family planning and reproductive health services for every woman on Earth is about $20 billion, which sounds like a lot of money, but, you know, that's what the bankers on Wall Street gave themselves in bonuses.
Right, right. Let's put it in perspective there, yeah. Yeah.
And the U.S. share of the cost is about $1 billion, which is what we're spending on the war in Afghanistan every 13 hours.
Mm-hmm.
So we can do this.
Okay, sounds good. And where can people find out more information? What's the website, please?
www.popjustice.org.
Popjustice.org. Thank you so much, Laurie Mazur.
Thanks so much.
And the book again, A Pivotal Moment, Population Justice and the Environmental Challenge. Well, I want to thank you for listening in today. Comments or feedback on today's show, let me know. You can find me at info@conversationslive.net. We will be back next week with an all-new live show. Until then, live well, live strong. Thanks for being with us on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Next Monday on Conversations Live, leading financial expert Jane Bryant Quinn on how to manage your money today. Quinn will share how to know if you should fire your bank, how to identify crooks in suits, how to avoid being ripped off by the new credit card rules, and how to reduce student debt. She'll also provide tips on managing your money when you simply don't have time. And the top three things you should focus on today. Tune in Monday at noon Pacific to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. And see conversationslive.net for more information. Email Vicki at info@conversationslive.net if you've got questions you'd like to get answered.